Hello and welcome to the Bulletproof Entrepreneur. I'm your host, Alan Smith, and today's episode's a bit different. In this episode, I'm going to be interviewing, well, myself. Here's the reason. We've completed season one. We're about to embark on season two. In the future, I hope we'll have season three, four, five, and beyond. So I just felt now is a useful opportunity just to spend some time giving you a bit of the background to my own personal journey, my own business journey that's brought me to where I am today, and hopefully gives me the permission to continue on this journey and continue sharing and speaking with numerous entrepreneurs, successful business people, and those that can help us all learn more as time goes on. So without further ado, let me just sort of backtrack to my early days. I'm from the west coast of Scotland. I'm from a small town called Troon, T-R-O-O-N, known to nobody in the world unless you're a golfer or you enjoy the sport of golf, because Troon's claim to fame is that once every 7 or 8 years, it plays host to the British Open Golf Championships, or the Open, as it's called, and the entire world of golf descends upon this small seaside town of about 15,000 population, and everyone goes mad for about a week. And that certainly was part of my childhood growing up, because on one side of where we lived, you've got, you know, a range of fabulous golf courses, and the other side is the beach. And well, I can tell you, it's no Saint-Tropez, it's chilly up there. But it was a great place to grow up, a great place to have friends, huge number of friends I had going to school there. And I'm still very good friends with a whole bunch of them, even to this day. Now, my parents, interesting, my dad was, and actually still is, still going strong, quite a force of nature, my old man. He is and was an entrepreneur. His line of work was property, real estate, as the Americans call it. He was a property entrepreneur. He started off very modestly. He was, you know, buying and selling and doing up residential properties and renting them out and moving them on. And then that grew and grew into quite large commercial developments. And it's fair to say he enjoyed quite a significant amount of success. And that meant that at certain times of my life, we would certainly be considered by most people's standards to be fairly affluent. We certainly had a period of time where we were living in a huge house, a big house with tennis courts in the garden and stables and horses and all that sort of thing. I mean, I was only like 8, 9, 10 years old, so I don't have huge memories of it. But what I always remember, this is something that's just stuck, it's indelible in my mind, is that my old man, because he was doing well and he likes his cars, he had a Rolls Royce. So he had this Rolls Royce Silver Shadow that he used to drive us kids to school in every day. And I think it's the only time I've ever been in a Rolls Royce in my life. It was my dad taking me to and from school, or to school anyway, in those early days. And kind of strange. I mean, I've never been sort of bullied in a traditional way, but certainly there was a fair amount of mickey taking by my friends who were, how can I put it, just, you know, had relatively normal families and backgrounds and upbringings. And to be dropped off at the school gates in this shiny brand new Rolls Royce was quite an interesting experience. But as anyone in particularly in business in general, but in property in particular, anyone who's exposed to that will know it really is something of a roller coaster, in that sometimes you can be doing extremely well and things can go wrong, and that can change, you know, pretty much overnight. And what happened was with my dad was, and this is going back, so this is the 1970s, and a number of different things happened. There was political things. I don't know the ins and outs of it. What I do know is his property empire kind of collapsed almost overnight. And all of a sudden, and it must have, you know, in reality, looking back, this must have been over months and months. But for me, it felt like almost overnight, in that I was no longer going to school in a Rolls Royce. I was getting the bus to school all of a sudden. And we were no longer living in a palatial big home with a huge garden. We were all crammed into a small flat. So clearly our family fortunes had changed, and they changed, you know, rapidly and quickly. And looking back, so I'm the oldest of four kids. I've got two younger brothers and a younger sister. And so I'm now about maybe 11 years old at the time. And my family's, we moved home. We moved to a different town. moved to a different school, and life was very is very changeable for me. And what I know is my parents were just, they were just used to argue all the time. They used to just kind of, I mean, no violence or anything, but certainly there's shouting and screaming on a regular basis, which I now know, looking back on it, to be primarily financial related. The family was going through some very, very difficult financial times, which effectively caused a marital breakdown. Lots of disruption in the family home. And I, without getting sort of too deep and personal about it, I will never forget, as the eldest kid, having my younger siblings sort of come through to my bedroom at night, all kind of worried and cry, why are mummy and daddy arguing? And I didn't really know, I couldn't really help them, give them an answer, but I knew somewhere deep down, this was a financial thing. This was about money. This is about our family relationship with money. It was about having money and then no longer having money and all the implications that come with that. And I just remember thinking to myself, it's always stuck with me. I thought, I don't really understand money, but I need to learn. I need to find out about this thing called money. And of course, that has, in some ways, I didn't really realize it or recognize it at the time, but that has certainly, I guess, driven some of my decisions as I got older in life and some of my career choices as things went on. Because what ultimately happened, my parents ended up getting divorced. Divorce is ugly at the best of times. It wasn't terrible, but it was effectively a family breakup, which, it's just not a nice experience to go through, particularly as a child. Fast forward eventually, and sadly, my mother, she became alcoholic, and she died maybe 10 or 11 years ago now. My dad's still going strong. He's still in business. He still keeps himself active and busy, and I have a good relationship with him. But that was my upbringing. That was my childhood. And when I look back on that kind of experience of being, one moment you're wealthy, one minute you're not, and all the sort of emotional ups and downs that go with that, if anything, that put me off, this idea of being an entrepreneur. And I was more attracted to, I guess, to safety and security. And then kind of fast forward, I was what I would call a classic, like, mediocre student, B grade student. I wasn't terrible. I wasn't getting D's and F's, and I certainly wasn't getting any A's. I would get B grades for almost every subject, which means, you're doing okay. You're not doing terribly. And I had no real ambition or clear direction as to what I wanted to do for a career. And so I ended up just drifting off and getting a place at university in Glasgow, which is kind of the nearest place we could go to, nearest city that had colleges and universities at. And the only reason that I went there and I did a business studies degree. And really the only reason I did that was because, A, it was fairly generic. You did a bit of accounting and a bit of marketing and legal stuff and kind of kept your options open. But the more important thing to me was that three of my best mates were going at the same time, and we all shared a flat together and had the time of our life and did a fair amount of drinking and seeing live bands, much more so than our academic endeavors. We didn't spend much time on that. So that was a kind of just pretty normal, pretty traditional up to that point. But I was never really enthusiastic about that whole thing. I was still kind of trying to find my own journey, find my path. I'm a sort of but this time I'm like 18 years old, still very much a kid, still really not quite sure what I'm going to do. And what happened then, and this is a thing, this is a theme that I just really believe in, and I think about this quite a lot. I just got this theory that in life, in your life and in my life, there will be probably no less than three, and maybe no more than seven on average, what I call just big pivotal moments. Those moments where it's like a fork in a road. You turn left or you turn right. You say yes or you say no. And the whole trajectory, the next chapter of your life, is determined by the decision you take on that day. And there's you can think of some of the big ones that you've made yourself in the past. And this, to me, this is what happened to me at the time. So I'm actually in the summer holidays, and I'm really not enjoying anything at uni. And my dad says to me, look, I'm going on this like a business development course. He was always very curious, always trying to learn things. So he goes on this course to learn about, investments and various other things. And he said to me, do you want to come with me? And I thought to myself, not really, but I better say yes. So he and I trotted off to this course down near Manchester. And again, just by pure, one of these just pure chance things, I ended up at the dinner sitting next to this guy by the name of Philip, who, long story short, I got on well with him. He seemed very plausible and very credible. And he said, well, look, I run a stockbroking firm down in London. We're really growing fast. We're looking to take on young people. You know, you seem like a good chap. Alan, would you be interested in moving to London? And as a, like a trial thing, you know, you see if you like us, we like you, you know, stay for a few months, see how it works out, let me know. And I think to myself, on one hand, God, you must be joking. Move to London, that would be crazy. On the other hand, I thought, you know what, I can give it a go. If it doesn't work out, I'll just come home. So again, very long story short, I eventually go home and I tell my mom and I say, I've got an opportunity to go to London, and bless her, she said, well, you should take the chance. And so she took me out and she bought me a suit and shirts and ties and all that sort of stuff. And I did, I eventually, you know, this wasn't very much later, gave up college and thought, I'm jumping on a train. And I went off to London and I got a job in this firm. And it was what I would call a very small, stockbroking, sort of sold shares. It wasn't illegal, but it was kind of wasn't high integrity stuff. They were sort of selling stocks and bonds over the phone to various investors. And it was okay. It was a baptism of fire for me, you know, learned a lot quite quickly. I was in a very junior, the most junior admin role, kind of, you know, making the tea and doing the filing and stuff. But I was around a bunch of very interesting people, you know, good salespeople. And there was a kind of dynamic, high tempo place to be. And I must admit, I took to living in London pretty well, pretty easily. I quite liked it. I liked the fast moving nature of the city. Very, very different to anything I'd been used to before, but I definitely enjoyed it. And that's where things began for me. So off I went. And so I stayed with this company for a couple of years in the end, but then I felt it was time for me to move on and perhaps just sort of seek my fortune elsewhere, probably with a larger and maybe more reputable organization. And all I did was I went out to a recruitment company, put my CV forward as it was, because it didn't amount to very much. And they put me forward for a series of interviews. And really the first interview I went to was with a company then called Standard Life, now changed, evolved and rebranded, and now called Aberdeen Asset Management, I think. I mean, nowadays they are one of the largest asset management groups in Europe, certainly. And they were pretty big back then when I joined them. So I went for the interviews and managed to get the job. And so my role was, is that there's a called different things, but really the phrase is a broker consultant, which meant that my job was to sell the products and the services that Standard Life had to the intermediary market. So to banks, to accounting firms, financial advisors, wealth managers, those sort of people. So go and say to them, well, for your clients, rather than use company A or company B, use Standard Life, because our products, investments, pension funds are better than anyone else's. And I took to that like a duck to water. I really enjoyed the sales process, really enjoyed the social side of it, meeting with these, predominantly there were business owners that I would meet. So somebody who ran their own financial planning company, I'd meet them and I'd pitch my stuff. But you get to know them over time. You get to know these people and you have you for lunch and you learn more about their background, their family, how they got started. And I think looking back on it, that's when my sort of interest in the whole entrepreneurship and the risks that people take. And I used to just to enjoy those conversations over time. It was a great job. It was a great job. It was well paid. It had all the fringe benefits. I couldn't believe they gave me a company car. I was thrilled beyond measure. They actually give you a free car and they pay for your petrol. Wonderful. But, you know, all those nice things that come with large corporate life, and there are a lot of benefits if for working for big companies. And as I say, I really enjoyed it. I was a single man in my 20s living in London. So, you know, it was a thoroughly positive and enjoyable experience. You know, I worked hard. Don't get me wrong. I put the effort in and I managed to be, you know, reasonably successful doing that work. And, you know, years went by and I just continued along that role until, I don't know, I just began to, a lot of things in life, you can be enjoying them up to a point and then maybe something, some magic goes out of it. There was nothing, no big dramas that happened, but I was kind of just slowly but surely losing the energy and losing the excitement. And there was a guy who one of the accounts I used to look after, and he was a micro business. He was literally a one-man band. There was him and his secretary or PA. But they had a fabulous small business. They had, it looked after some amazing clients. And I used to get to know this guy, Simon, got to know him really well over time. And then, but he was getting on a bit. He was getting older. And just one day he says to me, look, Alan, why don't you leave Standard Life and come and take over my business? And you can buy me out and I can go into retirement. Happy days. And I thought for a moment, you must be joking. You know, I'm on a good deal here. And going, coming, you know, as a self-employed advisor or consultant with him. I thought, no, I don't think so. But the more I reflected on it, I thought, you know what? There's something in this. I've maybe run the course. I ended up being at Standard Life for 14 years. So that is, I think I got to this point. It's another one of my pivotal moments, because I got to the point where I was kind of on the edge of being institutionalized. I think if you stay with a company, you know, if you get to 15, 20 years, you're probably never, ever going to leave. And but in at that time, I was still, and I think this is really important when you're making big decisions, you're thinking about the downside, because I wasn't married. I didn't have kids. I just had to look after myself. And I had enough self-confidence, you call it arrogance if you want. But I just thought, look, it was another one of my, a bit like when I moved to London, look, if it doesn't work out, I'll find something else. But I was still weighing it up. I couldn't, you know, work out, because if I leave, it's going to be really, I give up a lot to leave, and the future is highly, highly uncertain. And I remember, you know, so in those moments, you seek counsel from everyone you know. I was asking my dad, asking my brothers, asking friends, what do you think? And no one can really make the decision for you. Everyone's got their advice, but ultimately it's down to you. But I always remember the moment that made me shift. And I thought, I was talking to a friend of mine at the time. I thought he was being like deeply profound. It turns out, I think it was, this is a famous quote from, I think it's Mark Twain or someone like that. But it goes, when you get older and you look back on your life, you tend not to regret so much the things you've done, but the things you haven't done. And this guy said to me, he said, Alan, you're always going to wonder, if you don't go, if you don't jump into this new opportunity, you're always going to wonder what would have happened if you did. And I thought, you're right. You're right. If I don't go, I'm going to live to regret that move of, you know, that non-move of staying where I was. So in the end, I just said, right, I'm going to do it. And there wasn't a lot of risk really, really for me. I mean, I remember when I went to resign, I spoke to my boss at the time, and he said, look, I understand why you're going. Look, if it doesn't work out, come back. I'll give you another job here. And I don't think I ever would have done, to be fair, but it's kind of nice to know that worst case scenario, you know, I wasn't going to be destitute. I could still sort of put food on the table for myself. So there, that was in sort of next chapter of my journey. So I go and join this, you know, effectively a one-man company, became a two-man company overnight. You know, still an absolute micro business. And I'll tell you what, the learning curve is extraordinarily steep when you do that. I mean, just little things. And anyone who's ever done this before, left corporate life into sort of either setting up on their own or with a sort of startup or a micro business, the things you take for granted in corporate life, I'll tell you, you know, day two, laptops playing up. I said, Simon, what's the IT situation here? How do you get your tech fixed? Because I'm used to just calling a number and some techie guy walks through and just, you know, fixes your tech or your laptop or your computer or whatever. And Simon says to me, I mean, this is kind of pre-real internet days. It wasn't even, nowadays you say, well, just Google it. He just said, Yellow Pages. Anyone know? Just look up the Yellow Pages. Like, what? You've got to just phone some company. So there began just my journey of exploration, of understanding what it was like to be in a business by yourself, be on your own, be a master of your own destiny, because as we know, there's a lot of positives to do that, but there's certainly quite a lot of downsides as well. So, you know, all that happened, we just got going. He was a small wealth advisor, wealth manager, financial planner, whatever you want to call it, very antiquated, great guy, lots of integrity. I mean, a complete character. Again, sadly, he's passed away now, but learned a lot from him. I tell you what I learned from him was just the art of, it's just people skills. He was just an absolutely, he was world-class at people skills, at building relationships, asking great questions, of sitting back and listening and then taking it to another level. He wasn't the most organized. It wasn't the most compliant company in the world. You know, but, you know, again, completely, you know, honest and full of integrity. But I brought in, I mean, believe it or not, anyone who knows me now probably smile listening to this, but I brought in a degree of I came from that corporate background, so I brought in sort of organizational structures, systems, processes, compliance, technology, all that stuff. So it was a good marriage with his kind of relationship skills and his community of clients. He had some fabulous clients, and me just sort of bringing in a bit of a modern approach to the whole thing. It just really worked, and he and I just worked well. And he actually just, the plan was he was going to go into phased retirement, go down to 4 days a week, 3 days a week, 2 days a week, and retire. That's exactly what happened. And in fact, it happened quite quickly. We sped the whole thing up because it was working well. And so then effectively the two-man band, as was, became back to being a one-man band. So it's back to kind of me by myself again. And in my madness, looking back, I don't even know why I did some of these things. So I bought Simon's business effectively from him. And then another little business came up for sale. And I thought, oh, I think I'll go and buy that. I must have thought I was some sort of serial business acquirer, entrepreneur. I didn't really know what I was doing. I really didn't. But I thought, oh, I have a conversation with this guy. So there was another, a similar sort of sized business. And without a huge amount, I must say, of research and due diligence, I made an offer and he accepted. So I bought another business. And all of a sudden, I'm overwhelmed with volume of clients and opportunities and things to go at. But there is not enough hours in the day. Honestly, I was just working ridiculous hours at the time, trying to keep the whole thing going, trying to keep the whole thing moving. And I had to just start recruiting at the time. I just thought, I didn't know any better. I just thought, how do you grow a business? You're just going to hire people. So I just went out and I no real grand plan. That's one thing I never had, was a big vision. I just thought, keep working, keep speaking with clients, keep bringing them in, and then find people to help you. And my first real hire was a guy called Graham, brought in as a financial planner. Graham's still with me to this day. Fabulous guy. And then we grew again, and we had more business, more clients, more referrals. And so then we hired Charles. Charles is still with me to this day. So people stick around. And we just continue to grow the business, just organically, word of mouth, one client at a time, making it up as we go along, just doing our best, just, you know, showing up every day, being honorable, being ethical, doing the right thing by our clients, looking after people. And before you know it, you look around. I thought it was by myself, but you look around, you know, a year, two, three, 5 years later, you realize actually we've got a business here. There are people who are showing up here to work. They've got families, they've got mortgages to pay. We've got clients who are reliant upon us. And it's a very interesting experience and journey to be on. And so fast forward to where we are today. And so the main business now is called Capital Asset Management, which is an independent wealth management company that looks after business owners, entrepreneurs, and their families. And I have to say that my industry, the financial services industry, doesn't, in my opinion, particularly look after business owners particularly well in terms of the products, the services, the fee models, the structures that are on offer. As an insider, I can tell you that it's, by and large, it doesn't do a great job of looking after business owners. But I, for one, love dealing with business owners. I love hearing their stories. I love listening. Every time I meet with a client or a prospective client, I ask them because I'm genuinely interested. I ask them about their journey. I ask them how they got started. And you know, the stories are fascinating. It's often like if you're familiar with the concept of the hero's journey, you know, used by, you know, Pixar movies, Hollywood movies, it all follows a kind of a well-established path that, you know, our intrepid hero is dissatisfied with the status quo and sets off on an adventure. He's faced with challenges and obstacles and danger everywhere. Often they'll have a guide or someone to show them the way. And against all the odds, usually, particularly if it's a Hollywood film, not always, unfortunately, in business terms, but there's usually a happy ending. There's usually, you know, success against all the challenges, all the odds, and our hero emerges the other side as a different person, having sort of conquered their fears, you know, achieved their ambitions, and then sort of enjoys life on the other side as they prepare then for their next adventure. And that was always very, very similar to these entrepreneurial stories that I would hear. You know, I'd say to the founder, well, you know, how did you get started? And it would often be, oh, I was working for XYZ, big corporate, and, you know, me and my friend, we had this idea. We thought if we did this, if we did that, we could do it ourselves. And so we left this big business and we started a new company. And I would say, what was going on? Were you married at the time? Oh, often he'll say, yeah. I had a couple of young kids at the time, under 5 years old. And I said, what did your partner think about it? Oh, she thought I was nuts, thought I was crazy. And, you know, all these stories are, you know, they're just really deeply human stories. They're about our innate human spirit of adventure and of risk, albeit calculated risk, I hope, and threats but opportunities and ideally success on the other side. And honestly, I used to be in our meeting rooms having these conversations, and the amount of times I thought, you know, I wish I'd recorded this. The little gems of absolute wisdom and gold dust throughout some of these conversations, which were fundamentally just somebody sharing their own story, sharing their experiences, sharing the mistakes that they'd made and the successes they'd had and what they would do different if they had their time again. And, you know, that was the genesis, really, of the podcast. Because the podcast, often I'll be speaking to people at or around about a business exit when they were doing this, literally this kind of life transformation where you go from being a business owner and sort of king or queen of your castle to being an ex-business owner, because you know, you sell your baby, you hand across the crown jewels, the things that you have created by, you know, crafted with your own hands in exchange, hopefully, for a kind of, you know, a life-changing sum of money. And there's a really, really interesting kind of human dynamic around that. What goes on? You know, I've said before, I talk about this experience at the intersection of business and money and family and life in general. All those things all blended together. It's a complex mixture. It's sort of psychological as much as it's financial. There's so many things going on. And as I say, I was just always fascinated and just really energized by the conversations that I thought, I'm gonna create a podcast from this. So yeah, as I've said elsewhere, that's where the entrepreneur transition was born, and that's where we now take it to the bulletproof entrepreneur. So I'm having a lot of fun doing this. I thank you very much for indulging me in rambling on for the last half hour or so, sharing my story. I hope you've got something out of it. I've got massive imposter syndrome right now by, you know, having you on this journey with me, having you listen to me, because, and I just got, before I sign off in a couple of minutes, I just want to share a quick story because it might help you, it might resonate with you. But all my business life, probably all my life, I've got this thing called imposter syndrome. I can't believe the rooms I sometimes find myself in, the people I'm fortunate enough to be speaking to. And I always think they're going to find me out someday. Somebody's going to find out that I really don't know what I'm doing, and I'm making it up as I go along. And a couple of years ago, it was another one of these situations. I was very privileged to be invited to this really high-end gathering of business leaders. And I mean, seriously, these were around the table. It was in a private dining room in a fancy restaurant in London. And it was literally, you know, CEOs and chairmen of, you know, FTSE 100 listed businesses, you know, banks and huge organizations. And little old me, and we're all sat around the table and, you know, all very, you know, nice and polite and chit chat and what have you. And there was this one guy, obviously I won't mention his name, amazing character, created a business from nothing to a huge company. You know, it is a FTSE 250 listed business, done extraordinarily well, brilliant guy. And he just says, sort of out of nowhere, he said, I don't know why I'm here. I don't know how I got invited amongst all you guys. He said, you know what? I got to tell you, amongst us, he said, I've been making it up as I go along all my life, and I'm going to get found out one day. I can't believe it. So he just breaks the ice. And I'll tell you, it was hilarious because almost to a man, and unfortunately it was only men, but one by one, the next guy goes, oh, that's exactly what I was thinking. And all around the room, all these sort of big, robust, successful business people were all kind of just admitting that none of us know, I wouldn't say we don't know what we're doing, but we're not experts. No one has got all the answers. We're all just showing up, doing our best every day. And for me, that was just kind of nice. It was reassuring. It just reminded me, I thought, you know, that I'm not alone. I'm not the only one with imposter syndrome. I'm not the only one who thinks he's very lucky and privileged to be in a position that he is. So I always remember fondly that story, especially in my more nervous moments. So look, I'm wrapping up now. In summary, I just want to just, you know, remind you of a couple of things. First of all, remember my you know, moments of life, these pivot moments, these 3 to 7 moments, turn left, turn right. The thing to help you make your decision is by imagining the older version of yourself, looking back on your life. Would you regret not doing the thing? If the answer is, I don't think so, I'm not sure if I'd bother one way or another, then don't do it. It has to be a yes, I would regret, no, or at least I would regret not trying to find out. So that is a useful decision-making process. The other thing is, you know, is take a risk. You know, if you, the audience here are generally risk takers, they are business owners, they are entrepreneurs, and the people who support and advise entrepreneurs. So you're not a stranger to taking risks, but take a risk, but ensure your safety net is in place. You know, when I moved to London, I thought I could go home. When I changed jobs, I thought I'll get another job. The worst case scenario was one that I could have handled, and then I've made the leap. So be prepared to take a risk, but try to do your best to make sure there's a safety net in place. Another thing I would say is, you know, it's like when I left that big corporate job, I just knew in my gut, I don't know why, I had intuition and I just knew the time was right. There was nothing wrong with it. I was enjoying myself. Trust your gut, trust your intuition. It's generally right. And the last thing I'm going to say is just, you know, I'm lucky enough to be in a position that I am, and I hope that everyone else can be, which is to find the things, the activities, the people, the places that you're passionate about, that you are interested in, that you would do for free, you wouldn't have to get paid for. And if you can do that and you can make a living for doing that, in doing that, then you're lucky and you've achieved well. And I feel, as I say, I feel lucky and I feel privileged that my day job that I show up to do every day, that's what I do. And this podcast is the same. I have great, inspiring conversations with all sorts of really, really nice, great, inspiring people. And it just, it's highly, highly rewarding for me. So, you know, find out what you're really interested in. And if you can make a living doing it, my God, you follow that. So, as I say, thank you so much for listening. It has indeed been highly self-indulgent. I hope you got at least a couple of things. At least you know me a bit better than perhaps you knew me half an hour ago. So again, really appreciate your support. Really appreciate you listening. If you can spend 2 seconds to subscribe, if you can spend 3 seconds to give me a review or a 5-star would be appreciated. Thank you so much. See you in the next episode. All the best. Thanks for making it this far. I hope you found this episode to be helpful. If so, I'd like to ask you for a small favor. Can you please go to Apple Podcasts and leave a 5-star review, as that's one of the best ways for others to find it. And please send a link to the podcast to 3 friends or colleagues who you know will find it helpful. That way we can spread the word and everyone can benefit. Thanks again for tuning in and being part of our community. I'll see you next time.